Devarim chapter 19. This chapter is part of the series of mitzvahs, like the whole main book of Devarim called Mishneh Torah. Is this list of mitzvahs, and if we group them together in certain groupings, in the most general sense, the entirety of what is read in Parshas Shoftim is the public mitzvahs, mitzvahs of the public order, and which means the structure of the laws, the structure of the courts, the structure of the leadership, the people who are in charge of the laws are in charge of the people. So not so much the specific laws, but the structure of the laws, the structure of the justice, and of the entire society. So here in chapter 19, we get to a very specific law, and it's framed in a very specific way. So the general category that these laws belong in is the laws of murder. Now, murder is one of the most primary laws, one of the first laws, in a certain sense. Of course, it's one of the Aseres HaDibres, which already should show us that this is a very primary law, a very basic law. It's mentioned in Parshas, right away in Parshas Mishpatim. Many times we have murder as one of the primary things, but there's something more complicated with it. Just murder, of course, is kind of simple, but there are complications because murder is not only the first law, as in the first moral law, what a person shouldn't do. It's also one of the first bases of a city. A city is the kind of place, a civilization, place where people live, a state, is where murder is taken care of, where violence is controlled, where there's a law to take care of the violence. Now, there's murder, premeditated murder, where someone murders someone. Okay, we have them. The laws are going to be mostly about the punishment of that murderer. What happens if we can't find the murderer, as we'll talk about. But then there's also non-premeditated murder, what we call manslaughter. Sometimes people get killed, whether by mistake, whether by negligence, whether by some accident. There's a variety of levels of premeditation, of intent in murder. And that is also something that needs to be taken care of. Not only can we not allow deliberate murder, a city is something that the whole point of a city, you have some self-defense, you have some level of people protecting each other. So we have to protect each other also from accidental murder. If someone's moral system or someone's political system only cares about deliberate murder and says, well, if it's a mistake, you know, it's all God that did it and so on, that is incorrect. One of the first times that it mentions it, it talks about how we say, God did it or nature did it. It happened by itself. It's not describable to a person, but nevertheless, there needs to be some solution for this. There needs to be some way to take care of this problem. Of course, the fact there's a solution or maybe some kind of a punishment even for someone that causes death through negligence or through non-intentional murder is also that people will be much more careful. In other words, we create this whole system. Everyone knows the system of a society, like the job of the Chachamim is to make Mishmeres L'Mishmarti, to create different kinds of gates around the law. So the biggest law that needs gates around it is the law of murder. And there's literal gates, like we learn about a gate that you create so people shouldn't fall your roof. That's a gate around the law of murder. And the only reason we need such gates and things like that, people take care of safety, is because even accidental murder gets taken very seriously. So now, the primary way in which the Torah talked about accidental murder being taken seriously, and now it goes one level more. One level more is that in the primordial law, in the law before, there is systems of courts that take the entire, what we call nowadays, the monopoly of violence, and take the entire monopoly and dispense justice entirely. There is some sort of personal law, some sort of law of vengeance, really. But it's not just vengeance as in the wild sense. This is what the law, the primary law, which is the law of murder, the prohibition of murder, is based on. It's based on the fact that people have relatives, people have other people who care about them, who are in some kind of a covenant with them. And if someone murders one of my people, I will murder him, or even I will murder one of his people. That's the law of war. That's the basic thing. Now, cities are about regulating even this, right? So, originally, we have, you murder me, even by mistake, I murder you, or my next of kin, the people responsible for me, the people who I promise to protect, will murder you, who are promised to protect me, will murder you. Now, when there's a city which has a law, a justice, the courts, and so on, they're trying to take over this also. So the Torah, and the first step, is trying to take over this privatized justice, so to speak, this law of vengeance, to somehow regulate it, to begin to regulate it. So one of the first laws we got about this is the law of Ir Miklat, which is that we set up specific cities where someone who murdered someone unintentionally, or we'll see in the next part of this chapter the complication about that, but he will go to that city and that city will protect him. It's sort of a sanctuary city, right? A city where the people who broke the law in that sense are protected, and they're not just protected. It's not just a protection like, okay, we allow accidental murders. So what it must be understood as the society, the more formalized law of justice, taking ownership over this, and they will take care. In some sense, just the fact that he has to live in that city is already some kind of punishment, right? It's a kind of exile or banishment or a prison. He has to be imprisoned in that, although the Torah doesn't frame it that way. The Torah frames it as saving the murderer or the accidental murderer, the manslaughterer, from being killed by the Goel Adam, by the person who's avenging the blood. It can also, in Chazal, definitely read it as a punishment in itself. And that's because I think that's the goal of this kind of thing. But also we have to imagine that this city is not just magic that it protects them. There's some kind of organization where they take care of finding out what's going to happen and so on. And we see when the Torah gives this law, it also gives details of who is allowed to go to it. So now, one more step we have to add to this is that, as in the whole Sefer Mishneh Torah, is planning for the people going into Eretz Canaan, to Eretz Yisrael, but not only going into, but also eventually expanding their polity, expanding their state, expanding by conquering more land, by just creating bigger cities and so on. And therefore, there's specific provisions in the laws for when this will be expanded, when this will be taken over more, and what will happen in that. This was very explicitly made in Parshas Veschanan, and here we have it in a more simple sense. So what we have is so what we have is the law, when it says Ki Yachres Hashem, when Hashem will cut off the nations who you are fighting with and you will take over their cities. Then you will separate three cities, and also you will prepare the way to these three cities. You will divide into thirds the limits, the borders of your land, and anyone, any murderer will escape, will flee to these three cities. Now, of course, this doesn't mean that now you have a free pass for murder. So that was not the point of this law. The point of this law was to regulate accidental murder, right? Accidental murder. So we have a whole parsha explaining who will be allowed to go to this city. So as I said, first it gives you the law will be three cities. And of course, this is according to how great your, how large your state is, you will have a third. So although it doesn't give like an absolute measure, it doesn't tell you exactly how far. Obviously, the point is that in each third of the country, of the which maybe these were like states within the country, like each state or each part should have one of these cities where their tzeach should go. But who should go there? Not just any murderer. Only whoever hits or kills, right, hurts his friend. Bivli das, without intention. Das doesn't mean knowledge, right? It means intention. And the way the Torah expressed this very beautifully, he does not hate him from yesterday. He's not a hater, right? That's another way of saying premeditated murder, right? If someone is in a fight with someone, he's in his hater. From the day before that means he planned the murder. He didn't plan it. So that's one way. Someone killed someone unknowingly, unwittingly. Or there's another way in which we could know that it was not intentional. Sometimes someone goes in the woods to cut down trees and his hand somehow slips from the axe he's holding to cut the wood and the metal will fly and find his friend, right? Kill his friend accidentally, so that we know it's not nobody. I mean, there's like a conspiracy. If he's just chopping wood, then it was an accident, a work accident, where his axe flew into his friend's head and killed him. These are the people. This was the person who will go to the city, and the pasuk, as in the style of this book and some other books in other ways, repeats itself. Why we need the city? Because the Goel Adam, the Avenger of the Blood, will chase him. Because his heart will be, that's the way of saying, he will be upset, right? He will be mad, and it will be correct, right? And he will achieve him, he will catch him, because the way will be far. But he does not deserve, does not have the law of death, because the law of death is only for someone who is a soin, right? Who is premeditated murder. But this person does not hate him from yesterday, therefore he does not deserve death. Therefore I'm telling you to separate these three cities, and specifically three. If there's only one, you still might not have enough time. The Goyleda might still find you, so you need to have three, so there's always a chance of the person escaping to them. And therefore, if Hashem will give you even, make your land even bigger, and he will give you the entire land, and as the Torah never forgets to repeat here, why will you get the entire land? Because you will do the mitzvah, and that will give you success in your wars and so on, and you will get you will love God, and he will give you success, then you will have a bigger place, then you will add another three cities, so even in your expanded land, you still have this space. And this very clearly shows us how Ir Miklat is like part of the basis of building a city, of building a state. You want to make it bigger, you have to make in the bigger place these Ir Miklat, so that the law of murder, and including this unintentional murder, and including the regulation of the punishment, of the vengeance over unintentional murder, should be regulated. And as it finishes, so that clean blood, dam nuki, unguiltless blood, should not be spilled in your land, which Hashem gives you, and then you will have blood on you. There will be blood guilt on you if you allow murder. And part of allowing murder, you see there, we're at step three, right? Besides for, of course, just murder happening is already something that the land, in some sense, has to atone for. But if you will now allow the murder of the person who murdered unintentionally, and that will not be justified, then again you will have the blood guilt on you. Okay, now we have the opposite. But if someone is a son, he did plan. He ambushed him, right? And he stood on him. He ambushed someone and he killed him. And that person thinks he's going to escape, then we do not allow him. The elders of his city will send his city, right? The original city where he came from, will take him from there, and they will give him to the hands of the Goel Adam and kill him. So here we still have the Goel Adam as the one avenging the death, even when it was premeditated, even was purposeful murder. It's the Goel Adam killing him. The point is that if the person is, the death is just to have been an accident, then we allow the Ir Miklat to protect you. Otherwise, don't allow it, and we take you out and return you to the original law, which is that the Goel Adam is allowed to kill you. And the Pesuk finishes, Lo Yisachas Enech, do not have compassion of this, because for the same reason, you need to clean, mevar, the guilt, the clean, the guiltless blood needs to be, the guiltless blood built, right? Dam here means not blood, literally, the guilt of the blood, guilt of pure blood, which was spilled in vain and spilled unjustifiedly, that has to be cleaned, and that is part of the fetuvah. That is what a good society is. Sometimes people think that giving leniency to murder is something nice. The Torah does not seem to think that. It's the opposite. Loisachis enecha, right? We do have rachmanis, right? In other words, we do have rachmanis. We do have compassion on the person who did it accidentally, but we do not have compassion on the person who did it purposefully. Okay, so that's one law about creating the cities, and each area, each province has to have at least one city in which the Goel Adam for the Ir Miklat. Now we have another law which is really about the organization of the city. Interesting law, but I think this is the context where it comes in. Lo yisase gevil re'acha shegav l'rishonim. Do not move the borders of your friend that the earlier generations, your predecessors, have bordered, have created. Like there's a verb for bordering here. I don't know how you would say it in English. Shegav l'rishonim. Point is that we have there's another one basic part of establishment. Of a society, right? This is my land, this is your land. There might be even like cities who have borders, and each city belongs to some family or to some people in some way. And these were established by the predecessors, by the ancestors. They have established these borders between cities. Sometimes someone thinks, oh, let me change it around. Let's steal some land. It's not just theft, right? It's not just like land theft. There's something more basic here. It's you're moving the borders that your ancestors have agreed on already. And that's like the peace of a place is based on the fact that people have agreed on their borders. I live here, you live there, this is my plot, this is your plot. if people move it, that's basically destroying the basic piece, not just like a one new story. We're very used to living in a place that has already peace, so we don't realize this. But you know, if you go in places where there's less social order, or less legal order, then you'll realize that this is a very important thing, and therefore, right later, we'll see there's a special kalola, there's a curse, a damnation for people who other masa gevilta er basasa. So. It's also sometimes hard to notice, so this is the law, we should not do that. Okay, one more, and now we're back to general, right, the general order of justice. That's the main last part of this chapter, and it's the laws of witness, the laws of proof. How do we know that something happened? There's always, whenever there's a court, whenever there's a judge, justice, you have to know what happened, and here the Torah gives some limits to that. So do not allow one witness to leyukim, to like stand against someone, to, in other words, to, we should be machriya didin, we should listen to one witness in anything, in the area of any sin, of any chatas, and anything do, you should have at least two or three item. And of course, the halacha struggles to understand what is two or three item. If two is enough, then what's the point of the third? But in the simple meaning, it's not hard to understand. The point is one person, one witness is not enough, two or three at least. The point is, of course, three is better than two, maybe. We can get into like different, in halacha, there's very formal halachas aides, like the laws of evidence are very formalized, but even in reality, it doesn't really work that way. People sometimes get confused. They think because there's such formal laws in the Gemara, that means that's how Bezin actually works. Bezins don't actually work that way, and they're not meant to work that way, and that's why we have two or three items. So the point is, there's independent verification, right? We understand the logic of this. One person, you know, might have dreamt it or something. You have two, then you have some independent verification that actually happened. Three is even better. And of course, how to exactly figure this out, that's the job of the judges or the people who make these rules to figure out exactly what to do. Now, there's one more very important law about witness. Of course, the big problem with a court who mostly relies on witnesses, especially in those days, right? Nowadays, we very much rely on documents, and now we have video and other kind forms of evidence, physical evidence. And already in Talmud and Chazal, we have much reliance on physical evidence of various kinds, especially contracts and things like that. In the Torah, we do not find, there's not really reference in any laws to physical, like written contracts or anything like that. Basically, all law is dependent on oral witnesses. Right, live witnesses. And this opens us up to many different problems. Of course, the first big problem, which is why it's also Neser Sadebris, is false witness. False witness is the biggest issue for a court system that's mostly based on witness testimony. Therefore, we need to have very extreme measures to deal with people who give false witness. Of course, that's why we have also the concept of falsely swearing, which is another way of proving that you're right in this kind of culture. That's why that's taken very seriously. And the same thing false witnesses takes very seriously. See, here we have something very simple and very basic. If two people come and give for false witness, and it gives lifnei Hashem, lifnei Kanim HaShoftim, it's considered before God, before the priest, before the judges in their days. And we find out, v'dorsha HaShoftim, it doesn't say here how, right? The judges figure out that you've been lying. Of course, the Talmud has some formalization of this, but again, we're trying to read it in the simple sense. And what happens is we do to the witness what he wanted to do to his brother, to the guilty party, according to him, right? And this is law seems to have been taken. This is a very extreme law, which is why we get the exhortation in the end. V'loy sochas enecho, do not have compassion. Do not let your eye have compassion. You should give exactly what they want: a soul for a soul, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a hand for a hand, a foot for a foot. This is particularly said about this, and we understand this very well because this is the kind of we call it very basic deterrence that you need, because otherwise it's very hard to understand what the price is for being a false witness, right? A false witness is always something that has low risk and high reward. Like if you hate someone and you give false witness and you cause him to be put to death or punished monetarily or punished with corporal punishment, and then, you know, in the worst case, you'll get some small fine or something. So this law is very smartly and very, very strictly makes the deterrence here, because it gives the price of bearing witness to be the price of exactly what you want to do. You want to kill someone, you should know that means that if we catch you being a lie, lying, you will be you'll be killed in the same way that you wanted to kill that person, and the same for any other punishment. And of course, that's why this doesn't mean necessarily only if the person was killed. And, the halacha says it specifically if he wasn't killed. But the point is, because there has to be specifically about the act of bearing witness itself. The act of bearing witness itself has to have this level of seriousness, this level of deterrence, that it should be carry the weight of the kind of thing you're trying to do. Otherwise, witness is very weak thing to rely on. So we need these very extreme measures against it. That's the chapter 19.